we left off yesterday. We were talking about some of the intricacies of this halacha of dalad by dalad. So we said that the Gemara does say there's a requirement of a house or room to be dalad by dalad in order to obligate in a mezuzah. And we saw a lot of different questions about how do you calculate dalad by dalad. Is it total 16 amas? Is it 8 by 2? Then we saw the question that the Rashash raised about if you have a room that's roi lekach to be used less than dalad al dalad, so maybe that's also chayv a mezuzah. Then we saw the issue that Rav Hager raised in terms of if a room is less than dalad al dalad, maybe the mezuzah has to go outside the room rather than inside the room, difference between bathrooms and small rooms, all the nuances that we spoke about yesterday. So there's another point about how exactly do you calculate dalad by dalad, another very, very relevant issue. And after we talk about this issue, I'll try to put everything all into a perspective, how to put all these things together. There is a statement of the Chazon Ish, where the Chazon Ish speaks about a factory, whether a factory area is chayav mezuzah. Why should a factory area be chayav mezuzah? You're not really using it as a makom dira. So in the factory, there was a small area that was set aside for the workers to eat there. So you have a little table, chairs, a little small area. So in that area is presumably a makom dira. The question becomes, well, is that area really usable? Is that area really dalad al dalad? So it depends on how you calculate dalad by dalad. So the Chazon Ish describes that there was a lot of heavy machinery that was built into the walls and built into the structure, built into the ground. And then there was a smaller area that was really tiny, less than dollar by dollar per se, for the workers to grab a bite in. So Chazon Ish raised the question, he says, how do we view this area? Do we view this as a big room? Because the room itself, if you measure from wall to wall, is way, way more than dollar by dollar. And it's been used as a makom dira. People are eating there. People are spending time there. So maybe that would be obligated. Do I say no? That the machinery that's built into the wall, that's built into the ground, is minimizing the airspace, minimizing the floor space. Mamait, at the end of the day, I don't have more than dollar by dollar to walk around. I don't have more than dollar by dollar to put my table in. I don't have more than dollar by dollar to eat in. So maybe one should argue that rather than viewing the walls as being the furthermost part of the room, maybe the machinery, maybe the pieces of equipment, maybe those are considered to be the quote-unquote the walls of the room, and you only measure dollar by dollar within that small area. That was a question that the Chazon Ish raised. So the Chazon Ish concluded that he thinks that such a room is called less than dollar by dollar. Okay, whatever you think less than dollar by dollar, you do with that room. Kibega, Rasha, whatever your opinion on what less than dollar by dollar is, Chazon Ish thought that that is the halakha equivalent of a less than dollar by dollar. So the question becomes, how does this Chazon Ish impact on us? So most of us are factories with workers in the middle. But rather, the post can begin to extrapolate that maybe this Chazon Ish is relevant for small kitchens. Although those who live in Washington Heights, or have lived in Washington Heights, will definitely appreciate this. The small Washington Heights kitchens, or not necessarily Washington Heights kitchens, have counter space built in. There's an oven built in. There are a lot of things that are preventing a person from measuring. If you would measure from wall to wall, you would end up with more than dollar by dollar. If you would measure area that could actually be used, that you could actually walk into, so it's significantly less than dollar by dollar. So what's the din? There's a counter space, there's the closets built in, all these things. Are these the halakha equivalent of the factory of the equipment that the Chazon Ish was describing, that minimized the shear of dollar by dollar, therefore putting us back into the Rashash and Rukh Kibeg and all the tumul from yesterday? And I say no, the dollar by dollar is measured from the wall space. So some poskim wanted to say it was the same thing. What the Chazon Ish was basically saying is that Takas, if you can't walk, well, you can't walk and you can't stand and you can't function, that's not considered to be part of the dimensions of the room. And others want to disagree. And the Sefer Chavas Hadar, the classic Sefer Ruchos Mezuzah, written last couple of, 20, 30 years ago. So the Sefer Chavas Hadar, so he suggests there's a big difference between the kitchens that we're talking about and the factories that the Chazon Ish was talking about. Argues the Chavas Hadar that in the case of the kitchens, the counter space was put in to enhance Dira. What do you put a counter in the middle of the kitchen for? Why do you leave more room? There it is, because you want to be able to put down food in order to eat, in order to serve, in order to cook. Why do you have a refrigerator there? Why do you have a stove there? Why do you have these things there? Because that's supposed to enhance your dira. In the case of the factory, why did I put the equipment there? I put the machinery into the wall so that my workers should be able to use it to eat. Well, this is backwards. I said, I'm running a factory. So a factory per se is not really a makom dira. I have to put a huge equipment built into the structure. And then, by the way, I happen to have workers. So Nebuch has to give my workers a small area. If I had another room, I give another room. I don't have another room. So the purpose of the equipment is not to enhance the dira. The purpose of the equipment is to do whatever job I wanted to do with the structure. And then as a secondary, as a tangential issue, I have to feed my workers. Whereas in the case of the apartments, everything is geared towards the dira. I didn't just arbitrarily put counters in there. I put in counters to make it easier to serve food, make it easier to cook food, maybe to put food down on. So everything is al-shem the dira. So I thought that was a very, very convincing svara. But again, not everybody agrees to that. So we have a few different factors in our equation, this chulent here, to try to figure out whether we have dalet by dalet, whether we don't have dalet by dalet. To exasperate the situation even further, some of the things that we mentioned from previous shiurim, namely, we're not even sure how to calculate dalet by dalet, because we're not even sure whether 8 by 2 is considered to be the halach equivalent of dalet by dalet or not. Some Rishonim thought the Rambam thought it was, others said the Rambam didn't say it was, the Rosh disagrees, the Chazanei, everyone's had what to say about that topic. And then to make matters even more complicated, we're not even sure how to measure dalet by dalet. Because quite frankly, we're not even sure how to measure one amma. There's a discrepancy in the poskim of quite some distance between the smallest shear of what an amma is, what the biggest shear of what an amma is. It all goes back to a tefach. We know that a tefach is an amma is 6 tefachim. We're not quite sure how big a tefach is. So some posts can put a tefach all the way down on the beginning of the list, way down around 3 inches or so, which would make an amma closer to the realm of 18 inches, about a foot and a half. And there are others, such as the Chazanish, who put a tefach significantly higher than that, closer to 4 tefachim. If it's 4 tefachim, then an amma is closer to 2 feet. So an amma may be anywhere between 1.5 and 2 feet. When you multiply that by 4, so then your margin of difference is going to be significantly bigger. So you can have a room that some poskim can look at and say, this is for sure dollar by dollar. So this is an easy shayla. It's chayv and mezuzah going in. Another poskim can say, they take out the tape measure, say, nope, it's a little bit short. It's not quite dollar by dollar. And now it's complicated. So now you have to figure out, you're going to follow Rabbi Kivega, you're going to follow the Rashash, you're going to follow Anith, you're going to follow Ba. It gets very, very complicated in terms of figuring out, do I have dollar by dollar? Do I even know how to measure dollar by dollar? And in terms of that I don't have dollar by dollar, what do I do with all this information? So it's for this reason that you'll probably find a lot of different opinions in the postgim as to where Lemaisa to put the mezuzah up. When all the dust settles, where to put the mezuzah up. So let's say, I remember I mentioned before Washington Heights. I remember Washington Heights was a common setup. Those who know some of the apartments that a lot of the young couples live in. So the kitchen was very, very small, very, very thin kitchen. And the mice on the sides of the kitchen itself was counter space. So depending on that Chavos Adar, do you have more than dollar by dollar? Do you have less than dollar by dollar? Remember, right before we got married, so I didn't want to make the decision on my own. So remember I called in my close friend Rabbi Simon at the time, Baruch Simon. So I remember the two of us, we were on the floor. We were literally on the floor with tape measures, trying to cheshbon out exactly whether we have dollar by dollar, but we don't have dollar by dollar. So to make matters more complicated, is that I think if I'm not mistaken, the person who lived in the apartment before us was Rabbi Moshe Targin, the Rebbeim in Gush. So I don't remember which way he had the mezuzah, but he had one calculation, and we weren't so sure. We had a little bit of a different calculation. Then after us, so Rabbi Uri Orlian moved into the apartment. So I don't know if he had another calculation. I remember that mezuzah was doing flips back and forth. And again, it's just when you throw a lot of factors into the chulent, so things are going to change. So sometimes some poskim are into the 8x2, some are into the Rabbi Kivega, some are into the Rashashas, some are into the measuring almas like Rav Moshe, like others. Again, a lot of things go into this question. So these shalas keep on repeating themselves very often, and people move into Bergenfield, so they ask me to come do a mezuzah check. So it's one of the few things that the rabbi has to, it's hard to do over the phone. People send me all the time pictures of the mezuzahs. I can never figure out. They send me Aaron pictures of mezuzahs. I can never figure it out. I gotta go and take a look. So if a person calls you from the Erev Shah, they call you from the middle of the Mooney somewhere, what can I do? I always joke with a person. When a person calls me from some vacation, some very exotic vacation spot, they want to know, it's usually Friday afternoon, 10 minutes before Shabbos, and they came to the realization that they can't carry this. They want to know, is this really an Erev? Maybe they can throw a piece of board here, a piece of wood here, a piece of box here, of garbage can here. So I always respond back something along the lines, if you would have invited me to come on your vacation earlier, I could have made things a little bit easier for you. But so far, no one has taken me up on that offer. But getting back to mezuzahs. So the mezuzahs have a lot of these kinds of shilas in terms of closets. So again, what I mentioned yesterday, in our house, we have the practice of following the Rebbe Kivega rather than following the Rashash and the Pesach Shuvah L'Chumah V'Daniel. We follow the Rebbe Kivega. So therefore, if we identify a room that's actually less than Dalet by Dalet, so then I'll have the mezuzah going out of that room into the big room. So it'll be, in a sense, on the left side going in, i.e. on the right side going out. How do I identify whether that's correct or not, whether the room is less than Dalet by Dalet? So the tradition that we have is to follow the Chazon Ish in the sense of that we're looking for a square of dalet by dalet. The fact that it has 8 by 2, 16 by 1, 32 by half, that's not enough. You have to have an area that's big enough to be able to literally place in a square of 4 by 4 hamas. Then and only then is that considered to be a dalet hamas. And in terms of how do we calculate our amas, so the ikar din is that we follow the calculation of Rabbi Moshe. There are different opinions whether an amah is about 18 inches, whether an amah is 24 inches or so. So Rabbi Moshe said an amah is 21.6 inches. That's the middle ground. Where did Rabbi Moshe get it from? Very, very simple. He measured about 20 bachurim in MTJ to put out their fists and to measure them, and he came out with the average size of a fist was 3.6. 3.6, you times it by 6, you end up with 21.6. No kunzum, no chokhmah, it's just simple tefach beninus, and amah beninus, that's what the shear is. So that's what we usually assume, beinu kulu, beinu chumra, that's 21.6, yeah, with the tefach being 3.6. I remember when we built the house, the shul, so we had to do some construction in the front, we had to put a deck on. So we put the deck in the front, deck in the back. So there's a mitzvah of building a makia. So in order to build a makia, the makia has to be 10 tefachim tall. So I told the people who are doing the construction that I want it to be, it should be 10 tefachim l'chol hadeis. You're ready building a makia. That's what make it right. So I told him we should go for the higher shear. We should go with the chazin shear of 4 inches as a tefach. So 10 tefachim, it should be 40 inches. So I told him we should make the makia from bottom to top. It should be 40 inches. So when they built the deck, So I went out to measure it afterwards, and I saw it was only 36 inches. So I was a little bit annoyed that they didn't listen to what I said, but it was 36 inches. But I didn't feel so bad, because 36 inches happens to be Rav Moshe's shear of 10 tefachim. So whether Rav Mezuzah or not, if Rav Mezuzah followed Rav Moshe, so our makas also be following Rav Moshe, that's what we pass in the halacha. So then I asked the fellow, why did he build 36 inches? So he said to me, the code in Bergenfield is 36 inches, in case you're interested in knowing that. The code is 36 inches. So I didn't understand. He could have built it more. To the best of my knowledge, the code is not like Baltasif. If you add more to the code, they send you back for another variance. I don't think that's what happens. So he said that. I don't know. He was in the. That was his vantage point was 36 inches. The code is 36 inches. So I said afterwards, I said, it makes sense that the code is 36 inches because that was Rav Moshe Shear and Shimmy on the zoning board. So Shimmy was from Lower East Side. So Shimmy Stein grew up with Rav Moshe. So it must be that, I don't think that was really why, but it must be that the zoning board in Bergenfeld, the Shittasam, that they held like Rav Moshe. So then after when we, in the front of our house, when I asked them to leave, what's called an amah by an amah. There's a din that the Gemara says that after the basic mikdash is destroyed, so Chazal instituted that you have to leave an amah by an amah free of paint or whatever it is. You're supposed to leave a space open, not fully finished, as a zeichel chorben. So when I told the fellas to leave a little bit of the front by the front door, that's not completely done, should be a zeichel chorben, an amah by an amah. So for some strange reason, a chutzot, a lot of people don't do this. Nobody knows why. The din is supposed to do it. When you build the house, you're supposed to do this. I told them they should leave an amah by an amah, but I was already nervous that they didn't know how to calculate, they didn't know how to listen to me. So I told them to leave a lot. I said, leave, I told them more than, for this, it's only a derabbanan, I would have told them the smaller shear, for sure would have told them a Moshe. So I told them, leave over about 20, I was going to think, they'll leave about 22 inches. If about 22 inches, they'll leave 15 inches. So I told them, leave 30 inches. I figured, if I tell them, leave 30 inches, then maybe they'll be good and they'll listen to me. So here they felt bad, so they left bigger. So anyone who wants to know, so that's why our amah by amah is more like 2 amas by 2 amas in the front. It's not a chumrah, it's just that the guy doesn't know how to take, doesn't know how to listen. So the bottom line is that the makkah is a little bit too small and the amas a little bit too big, but the derises were a little bit more makeup, but the rabbis were a little bit more makeup. That's when you don't do things yourself, that's what happens. Okay. Anyway, getting back to this story. So
why doesn't it matter that the closet, the way of movement, derech biyascha, is never from closet to bedroom.
It is when you walk into the closet.
No, I'm sorry, not a walk-in closet.
Oh, if it's not a walk-in closet, then it's possible gamma, right? Even Rabbi Kibega agrees. Rabbi Kibega only said a shita if it's a closet that people tend to walk into. If it's just a coat closet, that the whole area is blocked by the coats, even though in theory you could walk in. But let me say nobody ever walks in. So Rabbi Kibega said it's not chayv. Yes, we can raise this. We have a room downstairs in our basement, a very small room. Shep said, like 2 feet by 2 feet, that it's not even a room. It's in the bottom of the basement. There's like a little storage area. And when we can date ourselves. We first moved to the house 13 years ago. So we used that to store a lot of the CDs for the kids, and the old tapes for the kids, the whole room of all the Uncle Moshe and all the Marvelous Midas and all the Narishkeit stuff was like the kids' storage room. So I was told when we moved in, should I put a mezuzah there or not? So the answer is, well, it's a storage room, so it should be kind of a mezuzah. The other hand, it's less than a dollar. So Nacham also Rabbi Kibega. So I put it in a Rabbi Kibega mezuzah, coming out from that room into the main part of the basement. What the Metzias has changed. The kids have gotten older, so nobody listens to Uncle Moshe anymore. And number two, nobody can just cassette anymore. Nobody can see these anymore. The car doesn't ever see these anymore. So it's all Devarim B'Teilim. So I don't think I've been in that room in the last 10 years. So technically speaking, that mezuzah really doesn't have to be there. So I'm trying to remember. I think it may still be there. It bothers me to take down a mezuzah, even though between you and me, I don't think there's any reason why the mezuzah is chayef. But that area is chayef. Nobody ever walks there anymore. So even according to Rabbi Kibega, your pashtun should be potter. Okay, anyway, so there's one last akud of this sugya of less than dalad by dalad that plays out going back to Hilchos Sukkah. We all learn Hilchos Sukkah. One last akud of the sugya before we move on. And that's on the 11th of the Maamar Kamos. That's a comment of the Magen Avraham. So just to get ourselves back into the sukkah part of the sugya, the Gemara was discussing small sukkahs, the Gemara was discussing small houses, and in the middle of the discussion, we got onto this because of the sukkah of Hilni Hamalka. If you remember, we were talking about the queen Hilni, who had a sukkah with her seven sons, and the question was a sukkah above 20 amos, not above 20 amos. So in the middle of that discussion, the Gemara mentioned that, according to some opinions, when is there a problem of a sukkah above 20 amos? That's only if you're dealing with a very, very small sukkah. If you have a sukkah that's barely the right dimensions, width and length, and it's above 20 amos, that's the sukkah that's psula. Why is that psula? Gemara never explains why. So Tosa said, if it's such a bizarre structure of a sukkah, it doesn't look like a house anymore. It doesn't even look like a living quarters. Tosa said, it looks like a lul shotana gun. It looks like a chicken coop. Now again, I haven't seen too many chicken coops, but by the time I did, they say it doesn't give off that impression of living in it. It's a crazy structure. 7x7 tefachim and 20 amos tall. Nobody lived in such a crazy, bizarre structure. So that was one opinion in the Gemara as to why a sukkah above 20 is psula. We happen not to pask like that view. We pask in that a sukkah above 20 is not acceptable because it's a diras keva, and therefore, according to us, it doesn't matter how wide and long it is. It could be 100 amos by 100 amos. If it's more than 20 amos, it's tall, it's no good. But within that one opinion in the Gemara that the shear of 20 amos was only said on a very, very small sukkah, the Gemara began to discuss, was Hilni Hamalka's sukkah really so small? So the Gemara says, Hilni Hamalka's sukkah, she was the queen. So she's sitting in a chicken coop. She's sitting in a two-by-nothing sukkah. One says, no. Her sukkah was large, but it had many, many different rooms to it. It had different compartments to it. Why? The Gemara says, for tznius. She wanted. She should be sitting here, and then the men are going to come in the other. So she built little compartments, little smaller areas within the larger structure of the sukkah. But the Gemara says that each of those small compartments was treated as an independent sukkah. So let's say, for example, let's say this would be a sukkah. So you have a little sukkah in that corner, a little sukkah in that corner, a little sukkah in that corner. So is that one big sukkah or is it 20 little sukkahs? So each little sukkah has walls to it. So each cornered-off area is its own halachic sukkah. And therefore, it's subject to whatever the proper dimensions are. 7x7, whatever you think the dimensions of the sukkah are. So you see a chiddush from this Gemara, that when you cheshbon things, when you calculate things, in terms of dal by dalet, 7x7, whatever your numbers that you're using are, so you can have a big area, and then you can have a little area. Each room, in a sense, for on its own. So that impacts the Nuchas Mezuzah also. Why don't we take the attitude that, well, this is one big house, so of course everything in the house is chayav. No, it's one big house. It's a lot of little houses. My bedroom is one little house, and my living room is another little house, and my kitchen is another little house. Each one is closed off by walls. Each one is a separate unit. So you don't take the attitude that, what are you wasting my time spending the last 3 days talking about whether this room has dalad about that? Doesn't the whole house have? The answer is yes, but irrelevant, because each room is a separate entity. So comes the Magen Avraham in Hilchos Sukkah, and he jumps even one step further based on this. Just as we view each room in the sukkah, each room in the house as a separate entity, listen to the Chiddush Gadol of the Magen Avraham, the 11th of the Rambam Gemara. Venerally, the afilu asuk gedola harbe, uvemakom echad yesh keren echad moshech lifnim, she'ein bo zayin al zayin. I have a tremendous sukkah. It's 100 amas by 100 amas. It's only 5 amas tall. It's got all the alehi durim in the sukkah. But the sukkah is made in such a way that it has a lot of sides to it, and there are some sides that end up coming to a corner, and there's one small area that's cornered off. I didn't say walled off. Cornered off, that if you take out your tape measure, that little small tiny corner is less than 7 tefachim by 7 tefachim. So comes the Magen Avraham and says, maybe just as we view each room as a separate entity, we should view each small corner as a separate entity as well. So if the shape of the sukkah is such that it comes in all kind of different, cornered around, you have to look at that particular area and say, well, is that 7x7? So says the Magen Avraham, if that makom is not 7x7, also lay shave sham. You can't sit in that area. That doesn't disqualify the sukkah. The sukkah is still a kosher sukkah, but that area you can't sit in. Why? Since that area is too tight, it's too narrow, says the Magen Avraham, and he brings Uriah from the Kitonis, from the little chambers, little compartments of Hilni Amalchus Sukkah. Because in calculating whether you have 7x7 or not, the Gemara says each room for itself. So the Magen Avraham says of each room for itself, then each corner for itself as well, and that leads to a chumrah that you can't sit in these corners because you're in a sense sitting in an area that's less than Zion by Zion. So all the other Acharonim questions, Magen Avraham, the Bikur Yaakov was written by the Yerach Lener of Yaakov Ettlinger. He says he doesn't understand the comparison at all. He says there are walls and here there are no walls. He says in the case of the Kitanias, so it's like this room, we're in the basement and the lower floor of B'nai Shur. So, leaving out the fact that these may be separate rooms also. This is a room. This classroom's a room. The hallway's a room. The other classroom's another room. The other classroom's another room. Each one needs its own mezuzah. If this would be a big sukkah, each one would be dan. We would be judging on its own merits because there are walls that are separating us. In the case of the Magen Avraham, there are no walls. There's nothing. It's just airspace. It's just the way the sukkah was built. And obviously there's a small corner and distant and remote part of the sukkah that's less than Zion Zion. Says the Bikur Yaakov, for them to do anything. That small corner is not a separate room. If that would be a house, we'd need another mezuzah. That's not a room. That's just a smaller part of the greater room of the sukkah. Therefore, there's nothing wrong with sitting in that corner. Again, interesting machlokes, just conceptually, for the architects, whether we view the small cornered area as a separate, distinct entity, or whether that becomes part of the big room. If you have mamish walls, then everyone agrees it becomes a separate room. So again, these shadows impact both the ruchas mezuzah when yechesh ben dalet by dalet, and ruchas sukkah when yechesh ben zayin by zayin.
But even if it had the walls, it's Zion by Zion.
No. If that area, that corner area is less than Zion, Zion. That's what he's talking about. He says, she'ein bo Zion al Zion.
I see.
It's ein bo Zion al Zion. If it's less than Zion, Zion, he can't sit there. So I guess we could say we almost made a siyum on the sugyas of dalet by dalet in terms of batim. Now we get back to the sugyas, back to chasukah. So we'll have to have the new mamim comes for they came. Okay. Hey, we didn't even need them yet. We just have for 1 minute. We have to get ourselves into the mindset in terms of going back to masechah sukkah. So let's just chazah just for a second. Where our main sugya is still the first mission masechah sukkah. Sukkah shikvah bichafama. If a sukkah is above 20 amas, so the sukkah is psula. The way it is now, it's psula. Not according to everybody, according to Rabbi Yehuda, it's kosher. But we pass the look like the Rabbanan that it's psula. Why is it psula? So we have 4 different reasons in the Gemara why it's psula. One of them was because when the schach is so high, you take a look, a guy, unless he's sitting like this, he's not going to see the schach. And what's so terrible, he doesn't see the schach, l'man yedid d'arasechem. You have to have yediyah, you have to be conscious, you have to be aware of the fact that he's sitting in the sukkah. Then we had another reason that it impacts on the tzel of the sukkah. Because the schach has to provide the tzel, to provide the shade. If the walls are so tall, the walls are inevitably supplying the shade and that detracts from the schach's role. Those are the 2 reasons first given. We accept neither of those lahalacha. We accept the 3rd reason that appears in the Gemara, that was Rav's reason, of diras keva. And that's why Rabbi Yehuda disagreed. Rabbi Yehuda held the sukkah is faked, it's supposed to be a diras keva. We paskin that it can't be too permanent. If it's too permanent, i.e. it's more than 20 amas, that constitutes 2 permanent halacha, and it's psula. Then there was a 4th reason that doesn't appear in the Gemara proper, that's what we just mentioned a moment ago. Tosfos says, according to one day in the Gemara, the reason is because it looks not like a house at all, it looks like a lushal tana gerdim legamri. So we accept the halacha that a sukkah l'mal mechaf is psula, we accept the halacha that the reason is because of Rava, I'm finished. So the din is pretty straightforward, but now the Gemara begins a whole series of discussions of how to rectify that problem. How do you fix up a sukkah that's above 20 minutes? So the easiest thing is knock it down, start over again. It's a minute before sukkah. So what do you do? What can I possibly do? So there are fundamentally two different ways to solve that problem. If the schach is too high, either you lower the schach a little bit or you raise the floor a little bit. So Gemara begins a whole complicated discussion about raising the floor. So what do you mean raising the floor? Well, in order to raise the floor, you have to literally raise the floor. So the Gemara raises a question about, well, what can be used to raise this floor? What if I walk in, the first night of sukkah, and I realize, oh my goodness, my sukkah is a little bit too high. No problem. I take a couple of blankets, and I throw it onto the floor. And now, oh, Baruch Hashem, now it's 19.9 amos, everything is great. So the Gemara says, that's a joke. That's ridiculous. Why? You didn't raise the floor. You just threw a couple of blankets there. Those blankets, easy come, easy go. You throw them on the floor, and now if you're going to take them off, you can pick them up. So that's not considered to be raising the floor. In order to raise the floor, you have to do something that's going to be, usually that's a bad word, but here it's a good word, a little bit of permanence to it. You have to put something there that literally changes the landscape. So it's not enough just to throw something that temporarily you have 19 and a half amos now. You have to change the landscape that there's a new ground level. So the Gemara begins a whole discussion. How do you do that? What criteria are necessary to in a sense, change the ground level, to create a change in the landscape? What has to be done? So this issue is not just a hilchos sukkah issue. This is a kol tarkul issue. Because there are other areas in halacha where I have certain dimensions, and I want to change the facts in the ground. Literally, I want to change the dimensions. So, for example, in Hilchos Shabbos, very often you have structures, you have areas in Hilchos Shabbos that, if you measure them the way they are going to be problematic. Well, maybe I can change those measurements. Maybe I'll add something. Maybe I'll throw something down. Maybe I'll change the area in question, and that'll work more to in my favor in Hilchos Shabbos. So what standards have to be done in terms of that? Then there's a third area of halacha, and that's in the realm of Hilchos Tumah. So we know that Hilchos Tumah, there are certain halachas, if there's a mace in one room, and there's an opening between the rooms, and then the tumah spreads. Well, what if I close off that opening? What if I change the ground area, change the ground, change the landscape in such a way that the two areas are no longer connected to one another? So the Gemara has at least three different areas of halacha where it becomes important to know what standards, what criteria are we using in order to say, I've changed the physical reality here. This is no longer 20 amos, this is no longer dalet amos, this is no longer tefach, whatever the shiurim in different areas of halacha are, those shiurim no longer there because I've done a physical change that has now altered the entire scenery of this area. So this is a kol tarakula question, and now the Gemara begins to discuss how do these halachas play out, first and foremost in Hilchos Sukkah, that's where our sugya starts, but the Gemara, we're going to quickly jump to Hilchos Shabbos, then quickly jump to Hilchos Tumah, and the goal of the sugya is going to be to show you how do you change in all three areas, and the answers may not be the same. Hilchos Tumah, Hilchos Shabbos, Hilchos Sukkah may not be identical to one another. So a lot of nuances are going to come out in terms of these three areas of halacha, the interplay between these three areas of halacha. That's the background of our sugya, and hopefully begin the intricacies of the sugya. Mitzvah Shem on Friday.